This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get. Except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. What's up, everybody? Welcome to a very special episode of GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. This week, I have joined the heads of the three families. I'm joined by host of podcast Unlocked, Ryan McCaffrey.
You're calling them up for a favor, Damon.
No.
You guys also have to do very offensive Italian.
Get that Marlon Brando impressions.
Host of our Nintendo voice chat podcast, Zach Ryan.
Thank you.
And host of Podcast Beyond, Jonathan Dornbush.
Take that, Jeff Keighley.
And we are
these three heads. Yeah.
And we
have you been waiting all week to say that?
Yes, pretty much. Yeah. Nice. I've rehearsed a lot of jokes for today.
I've assembled you all so we can hash out the year that was 2018 on each of your platforms. We'll discuss sort of the pros and cons that each platform has, and then maybe at the end of all this, we'll see if there is a clear winner for 2018, or maybe there isn't. Maybe everyone was just equally awesome or terrible this year. I don't know. We're about to find out. Now, of course, I know that the IGN comments section is a very realistic representation of gamers. So
metered, one to one.
You guys hate each other.
Pretty much.
So let's try to keep this clean, everybody. Let's be respectful of each other.
Yeah,
right?
There was a metal detector on the way in. Yep. It was like the meeting of all the gangsters in the Dark Knight, like, where they have to all pick all their guns out.
That scene in the Matrix when he opens
up. Yeah, I had 70 pencils planned.
Right.
Let's try to keep things... Keep things clean here.
Sure.
Disappear.
But we're going to begin with the PlayStation 4. Jonathan, before we get into this, is there anything you wanted to sort of get out there? I've got the whole report card
Vita
here.
Sucks.
Vita aside, sir. Vita lives. The only thing I would say as a preface, I too have many notes. We had the best year, I think, unequivocally. PS4 had the best year. Mm. Just going by Game of the Year nominees at IGN, we have 4 of the 12 as PS4 exclusives.
4 of the 12?
Yes.
I know about God of War.
God of War, Spider-Man, Astrobot, and Tetris Effect.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, Tetris Effect.
All right, great show, Damon.
So we're done. Yeah, we can just
really call compete
it
with those.
Yeah. But no, generally, we can go through it sort of bit by bit, but I think this year was the year that Sony has been leading up to since they kind of revealed everything at E3 a couple years ago.
So, So PS4 is 5 years old now.
Yes.
This is the Xbox.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
5 years used to be a ripe old age for a console. And then, of course, there was that news story this year, a very well-performing news story for us, where some executive at Sony said that the PS4 was entering the final phase of its life cycle. Do you feel like this this is like the sweet spot for in terms of software library?
Yeah, I mean, if it's a final phase, it's a hell of a way to start going out. I think this has been, not just for PS4, but Xbox One in general, like third-party and first-party, this is sort of the culmination of all the work of this generation so far. Hmm. I think a lot of the beginning of this gen was built on the back of the last gen and people playing catch-up. People, mm-hmm. don't get me wrong, there are still a lot of re-releases and remasters going on, but it felt like we were relying a lot on that stuff, whereas this year felt like a really great benchmark, especially for PS4, of what that system can do and achieve.
I mean, we saw last generation, the sort of third, effectively like the third wave of games towards the end of that 360 PS3 generation, the BioShock Infinites of the world. Mm. Like on 360, you know, Halo 4 came in at the end of the generation, was just brilliant from especially in the technical department. It was like, how did you do this on an eight-year-old console? It's unbelievable. So it's we're seeing that now, I think, with PS4. Certainly, and to an extent, Xbox as well.
Yeah, I think we're seeing the push both graphically and narratively in what these worlds can be, especially with something like God of War and Spider-Man. I think you're seeing.
I don't think it comes as a surprise to anybody that 6+ years of development on any system will teach you the tips and tricks and secrets that you need to create something bigger and better than where you started, right? Mm. And it's totally a cyclical thing where every generation you see sort of the biggest and the best games come out towards the end of that life cycle. So Jonathan actually made a really good point at the beginning when he was talking there about how if this is really the end of the PS4 life cycle, that they're really starting it off with a bang, because this year has been an incredible year. And I mean, 2017 was no slouch either.
Yeah.
So I think that regardless of if you set the benchmark so high at the beginning, and you're just building on that, like towards the end of that life cycle, you know, this year, next year, we're going to see just incredible stuff on both Xbox and PS4.
Yeah. So I think 2018 on PS4, it's really about God of War and Spider-Man.
Yes.
When it really comes down to it. Both of those games are in the top 10 best-selling games of the year. Mm-hmm. And it's probably worth noting that as of December 1st, there is no Nintendo or Microsoft published game in that list. We'll see if Smash can make
Smash.
It in there.
I think Smash will be there. Yeah, before the end of the year.
Hearing really good things about its pre-orders. The ship may have sailed for any Microsoft game in 2018.
I mean, Forza Horizon 4 is also a Game of the Year nominee. It is... When we talk about Xbox, it is, I mean, by default, yes, the best Xbox game of the year, but also a legitimate best game across the industry kind of year. And it has sold better than ever, but yeah, it just hasn't sold on the order of Spider-Man or God of War.
Yeah.
And then, Jonathan, you reviewed both God of War and Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Coincidentally.
Of course.
Your God of War review is the most read article on IGN this year.
Thank you, everyone, for reading that. That's very nice to hear. I worked very hard on that review. It's probably one of the things I'm proudest of while I've been at IGN.
And then your Spider-Man review is the fourth most read article on IGN this year.
Not bad either. 2 and 3 are both Kingdom Hearts.
Come on. Of course, both are big AAA single-player games. Also something that neither Microsoft nor Nintendo offered this year.
And they are dead. Single-player games are dead. That's pretty...
That's true. Yeah.
But then they're also, Sony also had Detroit this year. Detroit Become Human.
Yeah.
Which I know it has its fans, it has its supporters, but didn't make waves.
We gave it an 8. Yeah. They just announced it sold 2 million copies, so it's certainly not, you know, floundering. Yeah. It's not at the heights of God of War and Spider-Man's sales, but it's definitely doing pretty well.
Yeah.
And we also saw, at least for me, what's a really interesting note as a PS4 gamer, we saw the PSVR have this weird resurgence this year.
I wanted to mention VR,
And I think both the sales, they were really smart about the bundles they put out for Black Friday and all of that, and knocking the prices down for those, I think really helped it. But also just the flow of games. Like I, 6 months ago, a year ago, would not have said PSVR would have been one of my most played systems or things this fall. But between Astrobot, Firewall, Tetris Effect, Dercine, Moss, it has been a phenomenal year for a thing that I think we all for a little while were like, is this just going to die in 2 months?
I want to go back to Detroit for a second,
of course.
It's like I've said this before on IGN shows, but I really appreciate Sony funding and putting out Quantic Dream games in the sense that they are... AAA caliber, AAA budget adventure games.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Telltale's had been doing it up until the unfortunate end this year, but like nobody else in the industry, third party or first party, is putting out those incredibly cinematic, completely story driven games like that. And I really liked it. Detroit for me, it fell apart at the end. I thought the story couldn't quite hang on at the end, but boy, I really enjoyed the ride, and I think it's not as good as Heavy Rain. It's definitely better than Beyond Two Souls, But yeah, it was, I feel
what
like
about it was, Indigo Prophecy.
I actually never played Indigo Prophecy, so I have to say I have to plead the fifth on that one, I guess. But yeah, I don't know what the future holds with that relationship. You know, there was some sort of not so great rumors about the studio this year.
Yeah, a tough year PR wise for Quantic Dream.
Whether Sony will maintain that, because they don't own Quantic Dream. Correct.
But that's like at this point they're essentially a second party studio,
I
right?
Mean, but yeah. Remedy was kind of had that relationship going with Microsoft, and they, you know, there was a decision there, either mutual or on one side or the other, to not continue that. I don't know what the future holds for Quantic Dream, but I really, even though I didn't love Detroit, I really liked it a lot, and I was just glad to see it come out.
I would imagine, given that it has done well, you know, I don't think they expected it to do what God of War or Spider-Man has done, but I think given that it's doing decently and it was well received enough, I think it probably is very much looking ahead at what is the next project from them.
I hope so.
That'll be sort of the determination for how that relationship goes further.
Getting back to PSVR for a second, even though VR hasn't really caught fire the way a lot of people thought it would, it's been out for it's been out for a couple years now.
Yeah.
Sony is the only console platform that offers VR, and it had a legitimate Game of the Year contender this year in Astrobot.
So. Couple of them.
Yeah.
Is PSVR, do you think that is sort of like an advantage that PS4 that Sony has over its competitors?
I mean, yes and no. I do think it is a very unique experience if you are primarily a console player that you can't get in other places. And with the experiences they've offered this year, like if you have a PS4, you should definitely pick up a PSVR. Like if you can spend the money on it, Astrobot alone for me is such a joyous experience. But even something like Tetris Effect, which can be played both in and out of VR, like that game is so ingrained in its visuals and its audio, and to have that fully immersed around you. There are experiences like that are unlike anything else you can have on consoles. And so don't get me wrong, I think the tech still has places to go. It can still definitely improve in a lot of ways. Mm. The cable length could even be better. Like small little quality of life things could be better. Yeah. But overall, I think it was a very impressive, especially like sort of 6 month span for VR, that if you are a PS4 gamer and you have the extra income to spend on it, is well worth it.
Well, it's also really interesting because I feel like a lot of the times you get lost in this conversation about VR in you know, even up to earlier this year, we were talking about how the PSVR was dead, right? Like there was just not enough support for it or the games weren't good enough or whatever. But you have to understand that VR is still in its infancy. Like, it's still so new, and people are still learning how to create the right kind of experience, the right kind of games. And this is the first year in my time in the industry that I've heard anybody talk about games that are revolutionary in the way that like, I hate to use an antiquated term, but like an actual killer app, right? Like, the way that people are talking about Astrobot, the way that people are talking about Tetris Effect in VR, they're game changers. They're the kinds of things that make people see it and want to go out and experience it because they're only experienced in one particular vehicle, right? And I think that in terms of in the install base, there was an insane Black Friday deal for PSVR that put it into a lot of people's homes this year. So I think that given that boon at the end of the year, we might see a bigger and better year for PSVR next year.
Absolutely, yeah.
But is there any big software that's announced for PSVR that we're looking forward to?
I think that's the thing that'll really determine its future, but I think that we also, there's not a ton announced, I think, at this point, but you also, I think we have to take that with a grain of salt and not say, well, the PSVR is going to be dead in 2019. Like, yeah. I think we can't repeat the same conversation next year until we see a little bit more, because really, for 2019 in total, we don't know much beyond April for next year in general, but we are going to get things like Everybody's Golf is like a fun PS4 exclusive that a lot of people love in the PS4 community, and there will be a VR version of that. Ghost Giant is coming. We saw that at E3, and that was a wonderful little like diorama adventure sort of story. There are a few more things coming next year, and so there are the baby steps of it, and I think things like seeing the success of Astrobot, there will be an Astrobot 2. I don't think that's a hard sell. So I think it's just a matter of us giving them the time to announce these things.
I really want a Batman Arkham VR 2. I know it's not going to happen because, I don't know, but it does seem like, and it seemed at the time, that it was a Sony basically funded a small team of Rocksteady. It's like, hey, we need something cool for the launch of our VR unit. Can you guys help us out? And they were able to do that. But man, I really want to see that explored further. But I know they're, I'm sure, now 100% committed to whatever their next not Superman AAA project
probably
is.
We did also, interestingly, this year, though, see a lot of movie studios have things like a Justice League VR experience, or like there was
the Marvel
Spider-Man
thing.
Homecoming experience, the Marvel thing. Like, we're seeing a lot of movie companies take to VR as quick experiential things. And I think as those also progress, they're just like a fun little additive experience to that. They're not great. Don't get me wrong. They're not the reason to buy VR.
Exactly. It's not like it's not something that's going to make that system viable for or give it any sort of longevity. Yeah,
they've been better than I've expected. Sure. But I do like something like Arkham. When I first played that, it was like, oh, I am Batman. I felt like Batman. There is a joy to that experience that you can't quite extrapolate to when the camera is not immediately in your face.
Yeah. All right, now there was some bad publicity for Sony this year.
What? No.
Yeah. all year long, Sony was very stubborn in its resistance to cross-platform play and playing nice with other platforms. And you've got Microsoft and Nintendo saying, hey, we have no problem with this. And Sony was very stubborn and resistant to that idea. They finally, their hand was basically forced.
Yes.
But it's still even, it hasn't been realized yet, right? They say, okay, we'll make sure it happens in the future.
Fortnite is cross-play compatible with other platforms. They're calling their, essentially the PS4's capabilities for cross-platform play in beta currently, with Fortnite being the only game that offers that currently. So that's where that idea stands.
Okay.
Yeah, it's they've really been doing that for a couple of years now, where cross-platform play was clearly becoming a bigger and bigger thing with games like Minecraft and Rocket League and continuing on. It's crazy to see them keep to that sort of like bullheaded, oh, we don't need this, we don't need this. But I also understand it from like, we're the market leader, we don't need to give in until the last minute is, I think, where that came from. I'm not saying that was a good choice. I think that was a bad choice. But I can see why they made those decisions.
Yeah.
And I don't think it helps that right now Sony's in this weird place where Nintendo obviously has the Directs, which are great ways to communicate directly with players. Xbox has been investing in Inside Xbox as a way to directly communicate to players. PlayStation doesn't have that. They have the PlayStation blog, but it is largely personality empty. Like, there's really no person I think of when I think of PlayStation as like, oh, those three people are the face of PlayStation. We do know Sean Layden, of course, but and Shuhei Yoshida, but Shuhei has taken a bit of a step back. Sean we only see intermittently, and especially with them having been on the defensive for some of these more architectural things, I don't think they've done a great job of presenting themselves as a direct consumer.
Yeah, they did, and they didn't do PSX this year.
But I think that was a smart call. You know, like, I don't necessarily think that was a bad decision on their part, because if they don't have anything to show, then it seems better to me to hold that for a year and make their E3 or PSX 2019. Well, not E3 either. You're right. Yeah. So I guess like holding for PSX 2019 and making that a banger, like that seems to be a better decision to me than getting out in front of 100,000 people and disappointing them. And
you could have still had a community event without the press conference.
Sure. I think in terms of like bad PR this year, and like the way that we're talking about the PlayStation, like they had it the easiest. I think that the things that the flubs that they had, kind of pale in comparison. So I think the stuff that they were dealing with is a little less serious.
Yeah, I think PSX, having no PSX was one day of bad press, but like forward thinking, it makes a lot of sense, and I think it's the smartest thing they could have done. I think we're getting into a space where we're probably going to have a relatively quiet 2019 for PlayStation. So I think they probably are smart to take that step back to say, rather than just showing you the same things we've been showing you six times, let's not do that and let them speak for themselves when they're about ready.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, so, okay. Yeah. All that considered,
yes.
Did the PlayStation 4 have a good year?
I think it had an amazing year.
Amazing.
Yes.
Okay.
A 9.0 on IGN.
All right.
Yeah, I think it had a phenomenal year. Some of those press flubs aside, and I definitely think they need to be better about addressing those issues and speaking like people and not a robotic company, because even when they did give in to crossplay and things like that, it was very much like, after careful consideration of our company's procedures and operation methods,
yeah.
It's like, no player cares about that.
Well, let's not forget about the half-assed way they deal with the handle changes.
You know? Oh, yeah. Like,
that was pretty bad, too.
Yeah.
Still just coming sometime in the future.
Right.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I think they're like doing an early beta this year, and then it'll be fully available for people in March, but there are
only for
caveats
some games
to
and
it.
The, yeah, exactly.
Which could cause big problems. I think they, knowing what they had for this year and knowing that there will be a bit of a gap, they really, really focused on this year and made it a tremendous year, even if that means the next year may not be nearly as great.
Well, so let's look ahead that next year for just a minute. How is 2019 looking? I think the only sure things are Days Gone and MLB The Show.
MLB The Show is always there and will forever
and
be there.
And it's almost always excellent.
Yes.
Yeah, that's good.
That's true.
Days Gone is in April. They've said Concrete Genie, which is a smaller title, but still an exclusive, will be coming in the springtime, I think.
Concrete Genie looks cool.
I played that. It was cool.
Yeah. It looks really cool. There is the Eternal Dreams release, which we will see at some
sometime,
point.
Yeah.
They have still committed to, as of 2 weeks ago, I haven't checked in yet, but they still committed to the fact that the beta for Dreams would come out before the end of 2018. Hmm. Probably in between recording this and posting, it will somehow, it will change to 2019, but that's an eternal question. Obviously, I think we will get more PSVR titles, like I was saying, with Everybody's Golf VR and Ghost Giant and a few other things. But I think beyond that, we really don't know. The Last of Us 2, Death Stranding, and Ghost of Tsushima are the last big pillars of PlayStation right now. Medieval will also come out next year. But those three are like the big pillars.
One of those games has to come out.
I think one of them
at
will.
At least one of them.
Which one is the most likely?
Ghosts.
I know it's not the most likely. I mean, Death Stranding is probably...
I don't know.
I think it might be a lot closer than we think.
Unless Death Stranding turns out to be smaller in scope.
Yeah.
True.
It might be like a 5-hour game.
But they're not going to rush. They're not going to rush Kojima.
They're not going to rush him, but
that's not even in that dude's vocabulary.
Right.
The word rush.
It's not possible.
I honestly think Death Stranding could be number one or two of the three. I think Last of Us.
I think that's the furthest out.
Last of Us, me too. I think
That's the biggest one. Probably the most important one.
Right? It's probably the biggest and most important, and I think they know it is the furthest away, and that is why, like, if they had anything Last of Us related to show, they would have still had PSX. I think that game alone would draw people enough and make people care.
Simultaneous release on PS4 and PS5?
If not simultaneous, 6 months to a year apart.
I mean, we saw that for the original Last of Us.
Yeah, the Last of Us.
Within the first year of the PlayStation life cycle, we got that remaster.
And it sold millions of copies because so many PS4 owners had not played it. Yeah. So I think
we're going to talk about this theory when we talk about Nintendo.
So I think we'll definitely see one of those games next year. I think it really depends on just what the development life cycles of all three are. I think otherwise the other two will come in 2020 and straddle the line of PS5.
Mm-hmm. One more thing worth mentioning is that PlayStation Plus will be losing some value in 2019. It'll be losing PS3 and Vita games.
Yeah, so starting in, I believe,
Unless they supplement that with something
else. Sometime in March, they're taking PS3 and Vita off the list. I think they are going to probably start adding PSVR into there more regularly, especially with that base increasing.
Yeah,
I think it's just silly not to. And the fact that people have become so used to having six games available, I think they will likely just offer more PS4 games and probably two PSVR games per month, which wouldn't be bad. I mean, like, I always download all six games every month just so I have them in perpetuity in case I want them. But I'm not taking out my old PS3 and plugging it in to play one random game free for a month. So I think it's a smart choice, even though it looks initially not great. They also have been making... I don't think it's big to us in the room, but it is to a lot of our audience, and I think a lot of more mainstream players. PS Now.
I forgot to mention PlayStation Now. It's a service that...
They recently allowed for it to have the ability to download and play offline PS2 and PS4 games that are available on the service, which is, I think, them trying to move closer to parity with Game Pass. They're nowhere near it yet, but I think that is them trying to make initial steps toward making that a more viable, more interesting part of the gaming ecosystem that they have.
Yeah.
So that was a very smart move, and I think a lot of their moves that don't look great initially or just aren't as interesting are much more forward thinking moves.
Yes.
PlayStation moves.
Well, yeah, I remember.
Still have those for PSVR.
All right, let's move on to Xbox.
Oh, hi.
Ryan, the Xbox One is also 5 years old.
It sure is.
Xbox One X is a year old now.
Yeah.
This year, we talked about Forza Horizon 4, universally beloved.
It's the best game with cars in it. It's the best car driving. Because I don't even necessarily call it a racing game. You can race in it, but it's a driving game, and it is the best one in the last at least half decade, if not longer.
Also big this year was Sea of Thieves.
Yeah, I mean it didn't review super well across the board, and it did launch to kind of a not a lot of meat on the skeleton's bones. Ah, skeletons.
Yeah.
Pirates.
What's a common problem with these games as a service?
That's all we got for it.
With these games as a service, it's hard to provide enough content for people.
Yeah.
We'll just play it all day long.
But even as we sit here in December, Sea of Thieves is already a pretty radically different game than it was when it launched in March. They've done a lot to it. Rare deserves a lot of credit.
And State of Decay 2.
Yeah, which, it's sort of, I don't want to say it came and went. It kind of released again to like a lot of sevens. I think we gave it a seven something ourselves. But yeah, they released it at $30.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, you can't argue with the value and the content that you got for that. And it's there's still not another game like State of Decay 2. It was a shame that they switched game engines and they presumably had a bigger budget and a lot of the same just unfortunate technical problems still plagued State of Decay 2 that plagued State of Decay 1. But nevertheless, like, the core game's still unlike anything else out there. So it is a really fun game for that even launched at a budget price and is part of Game Pass if you happen to pick up an Xbox this holiday.
Yeah, and Microsoft acquired that developer.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure we're going to be talking about that now. That's really Microsoft's year was not about so much about shipping games this year as it was about building for the next generation coming up.
But this year, Microsoft or the Xbox did get a few games that were previously exclusive to PlayStation 4, like Hellblade, Nier Automata, and No Man's Sky.
Yes,
and I mean, so that's great to sort of fill out the library there.
Yeah, and they were all the versions that came to Xbox were all really good too. You know, No Man's Sky took a lot of flack when it launched on PS4 2 years ago, but the version No Man's Sky Next had addressed a lot of that stuff. And in fact, I think No Man's Sky Next was nominated for some awards, both at the Game Awards and I believe at IGN too. Like, I think there was Best Ongoing Game. It's come a long
best
way
dinosaurs.
As well. Yeah, and Hellblade was great from the get go.
Yeah.
So,
well, and they're in the under the Xbox wing now. So.
Exactly.
Ninja Theory as well. And then on the hardware side, Microsoft released the adaptive controller.
Yeah.
Which is a totally unique thing.
Which is just a wonderful thing for the community of gamers who can't necessarily use the traditional gamepad in the traditional way. And it's that they worked with that community, the assisted needs community to build this controller in a way where you can plug all kinds of different, it's got like a million ports on it to plug all kinds of different things into it to really be able to game however you are able to game. And it's it didn't get a ton of press, but it is one of those ways. Like, you can criticize Microsoft for a lot of things about how their 2018 ultimately went. But one thing you definitely can't fault them on is they've had a very clear message about, and that is, like, they want everybody playing on any device in any way that they are able to play, whether it's with an adaptive controller or on a phone or from a PC or what have you, and they've really embraced that in a huge way.
I think that controllers inclusion this year for Xbox is one of the most important progressive things I think any of these three companies have done, for just the fact that gaming can only grow if the companies making it allow it to.
Right.
And to be able to let as many people not just create them, but play them and enjoy them and speak about them and criticize and praise them. And I think allowing that as part of the Xbox community is such a smart move. Of course, view wise, it looks great, but I think it comes from an honest place of wanting.
It does. It really
to
does
make
with them.
People who normally might not be able to play these games be able to, and I think that's fantastic.
Yeah,
a lot of people sort of harangue Microsoft and the Xbox for not having a ton of, like, first party support and not having the same amount of games as Nintendo and PlayStation. But I think what Microsoft does really smart, where it makes up for what it lacks, is by doing things like this or looking to game preservation in terms of what they're bringing to their backwards compatibility, just second to none. That's one of the key reasons that I own an Xbox, is there's so many more games available to me via the Xbox than there is anywhere else.
But you don't have to dig out your old console.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And just the thing, like, Game Pass, I think, is brilliant in that there are, even this month, there are like four or five indie games that are on Xbox and Windows only. And so as someone who doesn't have a Windows PC, I can get Game Pass for $20 and play six games instead of spending $100 this month.
Right. And Damon, you mentioned the Xbox One X. It got down to $450, and even with the holiday deals, I think you could find it for $400 for a while. And it became really unequivocally the best place to play most third-party games.
Oh, yeah.
Red Dead Redemption 2.
Red Dead looks noticeably better on Xbox One X. Yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned backwards compatibility. It's the services that Xbox is providing that I think it's really the area where it's really excelling these days. I think it's the only console with built-in backwards compatibility.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
going back two generations.
Yeah.
Yes,
it's really cool. And then Game Pass. Game Pass has to be the future of video games.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's
such an awesome.
It's
service.
Quickly becoming the present. Microsoft's doing an incredible job on it, and I don't think they're. I think we are going to look back on Game Pass in 5 years, maybe even three, and be like, oh, yeah, how did we ever not have this?
Right.
How was this not the de facto standard you know, just even 3 years ago. Like, that's, I think next generation, that is going to be the way of the world.
I do wonder what it does for development costs. I know this was a discussion we had when it first was announced, of how as things balloon in cost on the AAA scale, how you allow for that to be like, we'll mitigate the sales by charging this $20 thing where you can get those games instead of having people pay $60 per.
Well, I think
it'll be interesting to see.
If Microsoft can, so they're obviously leveraging the first party content that they do have,
yes,
to grow the Game Pass library. And I think there will be a tipping point where they have enough of that content to bring in a huge installed base for Game Pass itself, that then they can leverage that to get third parties in, and it'll just snowball into effectively Netflix.
Yeah.
As far as, like, you have to have that subscription.
Also, Xbox is the only console to support EA Access.
For the last, what, 3-4 years now? It's been a while.
Yeah.
It's been quite a while.
So, all that considered, did the Xbox One have a good year?
I mean, I guess it depends how you're, like, sort of what the metric is. Unequivocally, the PlayStation 4 had a great year by every metric.
Mm-hmm.
None of us would disagree with that. I think the Xbox had a great year from every metric except actual games, first-party games released. Forza 4, yes, phenomenal. State of Decay 2, good. Sea of Thieves, solid. But then it was the crickets chirped after that. I mean, that was it. But, you know, we started to touch on the ultimately 7 studios they purchased this year. 5 announced at E3, 2 more at XO18, the 2 RPG studios, Obsidian and InXile. That this is a company that, I mean, they even at E3, they were the ones, Phil got up there and said, we're building our next generation thing. It's coming.
Yeah,
Sony didn't say
they
that yet.
Say,
of course, it's happening. But, you know, Microsoft, they are not, they're being very transparent about the fact that they're rebuilding the plane in midair. But guess what? Like, it's going to be a fighter jet if it can hang in the sky long enough. And next generation, they're going to be armed with a dozen first-party studios, all with pretty impressive pedigrees. And if Scarlet, the Xbox Scarlet, the code name for the next-generation console, follows the track of the Xbox One X being a very powerful, maybe even slightly, like, proprietary, you know, the X has sort of proprietary cooling system in it, and it is like a hyper-specialized gaming machine. That really doesn't bother with the, like, forget about all the multimedia stuff, no more TV. So if they keep down that road on the hardware side, the Xbox is really going to come out of the gate swinging in the next round.
They seem to be really forward-facing right now, which I think makes sense in the understanding where they have to cut their losses.
Exactly.
But I think, for me, the most impressive thing was after a couple years where it was very clear to me that Sony had the best conferences at E3, I thought Microsoft's was killer this year.
They had a great, show.
Really not just conference. In showing Gears and Halo coming back and everything, but just in general, the feel of that show had a great pace. It had great third-party support. It had great forward-thinking things with the studio.
It was all in one place.
Yes, that was nice.
Well, I mean, now E3 2019, Microsoft is sort of has the show to themselves under the terms that Microsoft and Nintendo aren't directly competing for that AAA, high definition.
It's an opportunity for them to really make that an event, right?
For sure.
I don't think they will, though. I kind of feel there's two schools of thought, right? You either you hit the gas harder with Sony not even there and really try to, you know, put your foot on their throat a little bit, but this generation is. "Quote unquote lost for them in the mindshare definition of the word, and they are playing for the next generation. They've made that abundantly clear.
It's the not the war.
It really is, yeah. Or in their case, the war, not the battle.
Yeah.
and I do think they're gonna. I think 2020 is going to be the year where they basically like show everything that all these newly acquired first party studios are working on.
And
next year is going to be about Gears 5.
So do they hold for 2020 and then come out of the gate swinging with something in development or ready for purchase from each of these studios? Like, do they launch their new system and have this army of basically first party software ready to go? Like,
I think a lot of it. I believe Halo Infinite will be the signature game to launch alongside the Scarlet. Microsoft has said, 343 has said that it will be coming out for the Xbox One, and I do believe that's part of Microsoft's whole blurring of the generational lines, but I think it is going to be a showpiece title for the Scarlet. And we were talking about Unlocked recently. The original Xbox is the only Xbox of the three that's actually launched with a Halo game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The 360 didn't. Halo 3 came in 2007, 2 years later. And the Xbox One didn't. We got Halo 5 3 years later. So I think their backs are up against the wall. You have to come out with your best stuff. Halo Infinite had an incredible debut at E3 this year. And they also, you know, Gears 5, they said 2019, Halo Infinite. No date given. Yeah. Yeah. It's 2020.
Sometime, yeah.
It's going to be a Scarlet game. So you got that. You've got probably we're due for Forza Horizon 5 on that machine.
Sure.
Fable will probably not be ready from Playground's other team. That's the hot and heavy rumor that's what they're making. Kind of all but confirmed. But they'll show it, I'll bet. And then it'll be like maybe the second Christmas game. I think they're going to be really ready in 2020 to not only say, here's a killer launch lineup for our new generation, but here's like our whole first year and it's going to rock.
I think 2020 is going to be fascinating. Don't get me wrong, I think we'll get good games next year, but I can't wait to see on the Sony versus Microsoft level of the first party support, because like you were saying, Microsoft has all that stuff coming. Sony has these games that will probably straddle the PS4, PS5 line, and then things like, I mean, obviously Guerrilla is making a new Horizon. I don't think they're trying to aim that for the PS4 next year. Insomniac's going to be working on Spider-Man 2, we assume.
Exactly.
God of War 2 will be in production, we assume. I think those things are going to come relatively earlier in the life cycle of PS5, so I can't wait to see just the amazing wealth.
Absolutely right. You're going to have both consoles, in addition to, of course, your Switch or maybe the Switch 2 that we've heard, you know, the just hardware refresh of it. Like, yeah, it's... You better save your pennies and be a multi-platform gamer next generation.
Ryan, I noticed you haven't mentioned Crackdown 3.
Yeah.
You know who else hasn't said a lot about Crackdown 3?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah. Maybe on that note. No, I mean, hey, in all honesty, like, it's had a rough road. But at the same point, no one's played it in... Well, I guess they did show it at XO18, and by all accounts,
made a brief
appearance
at the Game Awards too.
But playable, like make some judgment on. And all they showed was the multiplayer, which people have been waiting to see that multiplayer, Power of the Cloud, all that, and it was apparently fun, but pretty shallow based on what they showed there. So really, the jury is still out on Crackdown 3. I don't think anybody's at this point necessarily expecting it to be a game of the year contender, but it could have, like, we've seen it before where a game goes through hell like that and ends up coming out the other side and turning out incredible. So we'll see.
All right, and finally, that brings us to Nintendo Switch.
Hey,
Zach.
Hi, hello.
Hey, buddy.
Coming into 2018, Nintendo is coming off one of its best years ever.
Probably its most important year ever.
They launched a new console. Everyone loved it. They launched a new Zelda and a new Mario, and they put out probably the best Mario Kart ever as well. And all three of those games were in the top 10 best-selling games of the year.
And continue to just rack up sales. I think we learned just today what was it, 50% of all Switch owners own all three of those games? Yeah.
Or 50% own each. So, and I'm in the group that owns, I don't know what percentage owns all three. In that group.
I would assume most. Yeah, I mean, Zelda had that crazy, at launch of Switch, over 100% attach rate because people were buying multiple copies by accident and everything.
Yeah.
But then, at least coming into December this year, Nintendo doesn't have any game in the top 10 best-selling games. Sophomore slump is a term that is thrown around in music circles sometimes.
Yeah. I think, I don't know, listening to the way that you guys are talking about each of your respective consoles' years, I feel like Nintendo is kind of playing foil to those consoles, right? Whereas last year, Microsoft or Sony had Horizon, right? And kind of these like either new IPs or like second tier AAA titles, and Nintendo used that to their advantage and released Zelda and Mario. And while there is some discussion as to whether or not they should have held Mario for the second year, which I kind of have a tendency to agree with.
What? No. I was
really, I don't know. I think that they could have used another like major, major hit like that this year.
They had some gaps.
Yeah. But this year, Nintendo sort of flexed a couple of their like, I don't want to say B-tier franchises, but, you know, they brought out, like, Kirby Star Allies, Mario Tennis Aces, things like that. And then it wasn't until much later in the year, right in the 11th hour, that we got Pokemon Let's Go and Smash. So, Pokemon and Smash, two of the biggest selling franchises of all time. So holding off till the end of the year kind of leads everybody to have this conversation of like, well, it was just an okay year for Nintendo. But, you know, on top of it, Tennis Aces and All-Stars, or Star Allies, sorry. We also got Octopath Traveler.
One of my favorite games this year.
Yeah. Which Nintendo published, mm-hmm. Square Enix developed, but yeah, right. Nintendo published that one.
We also got Weird and got a little Nintendo Labo action this year.
Yeah.
Nintendo introduced Labo this year.
As a dad, I have to say it's not for everyone. Mm-hmm. Like if I didn't have kids, I probably wouldn't care at all about Labo, but with my 7-year-old daughter, it's been an absolutely wonderful experience to build those and play with those together. It's been great.
Well, I wonder, is it, can we call it a success? I know Nintendo.
Labo?
Yeah.
I don't think
Nintendo
so.
Nintendo has been trying. So
I think it was a success in the way that it captured some people's imaginations. Like Ryan is saying, I've heard a lot of parents talk about Labo and a lot of schools talk about Labo in terms of like engineering and science. But
parents like Ryan and Per Schneider, who are big gamers,
right,
buying this for the kids. I don't know if you're just your regular parent,
right,
non-gamer parent is buying this.
Also wonder if it will be indicative of Nintendo's plans in the future for Switch, because when Switch launched, they talked a lot about how people are like, oh, you can slide the Joy-Cons on there, but obviously it's built to slide other things on. And they were like, well, you know, we'll see what we do with that, or how we use the Joy-Cons differently. And Labo was sort of the first indication of what they'll do differently with them. Mm-hmm. And I love that ingenuity, because that is so Nintendo. So I'd love to see them, even if this wasn't the huge sales success it could have been, I would love to still see them try.
Iterate. Yeah, I agree with that. We also got Super Mario Party.
Yep.
Mario Party? Yeah, pretty
which
major.
It's traditionally been a very big selling game for Nintendo.
Yeah, and honestly, this Mario Party is, I hate to use it as cliche a term as return to form, but honestly, like the way that people talk about Mario Party this generation is more positive than I've heard them talk about Mario Party in the last few. Mm-hmm. Xenoblade Chronicles 2 got a major expansion. I'm not a Xenoblade guy, much of the chagrin of NVC fans, but but it does have a huge following, actually, and this is like a really huge expansion for that, and then, like I already mentioned, Pokemon Let's Go and Smash. Yeah. But I think to the point that we were talking about earlier, Nintendo is really relying on the idea that so many people missed the Wii U generation. Like, there are so many people. 13 million units was the total sales for Wii U. So, like, not a ton of Wii U's out there.
Switch is already outsold.
Definitely. So, they're using this as an opportunity to dig back through that library and really bring those gems over to Switch, and are seeing, like, tremendous results from that as well. So, this year we got Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze, which is arguably one of the greatest platformers of all time. And we also saw Captain Toad's Treasure Tracker. And oddly, The World Ends With You, Final Remix coming over
which wasn't a Wii U game.
Yeah, no, that was a DS game, but like, yeah, you know, they relied heavily on ports as well this year.
Bayonetta 1 and 2.
Bayonetta 1 and 2 as well.
Hyrule Warriors was also this.
New Super Mario Brothers Deluxe, U Deluxe is
comes
out in a month.
Yeah,
in
January. Next January. Yeah.
Next year.
Yeah.
Do you think is it too many Wii U ports or not the right ones?
I don't think that it's, I don't think that it's too many Wii U ports, because so many people miss out on an opportunity to play
completely.
So many of these amazing games that, you know, as a lifelong Nintendo fan, these are the games that I played on Wii U, but I also relish the opportunity to get to play them again on my Switch. Mm-hmm. Taking Captain Toad's Treasure Tracker on the road during my summer vacation this year was like so awesome for me.
It was great. And also having it as like a two-player thing with the Joy-Cons, of being able to just split those off and easily play with someone was
totally.
You left out one other killer port too. I'm being 100% serious. Diablo 3 is phenomenal on Switch.
Yeah.
I mean, being able to play that anywhere.
I was going to talk about that at like in third-party support, but hey.
Fair enough.
They did have two wrong ports, though. They haven't ported Wind Waker and Pikmin 3.
Well, and there's also the often rumored Metroid Prime trilogy that we still haven't heard anything about. And I'm not even sure if that really exists or if we just created that out of our own imaginations, like out of our sheer willpower.
Like the Metal Gear trilogy from IGN Days of Yore.
Trilogy. Good Lord.
I just want the NES remixes.
Yeah.
Yeah, those would be great.
Well, I've got some good news for you. No NES remixes, but you can play some NES games on Nintendo Online.
Let's get to that in just a sec. You mentioned the third-party support. Still struggling there in that area a little bit, but significant ports like Diablo 3, Dark Souls Remastered, Dragon Ball FighterZ.
Yep.
What else? Of course, Fortnite is on Switch now. And then Mortal Kombat 11 was already announced to be coming to Switch.
Which is wild.
That's really, really cool.
We talked about that on NVC this week. That's NVC.IGN.com. Thursdays at 3 p.m. But that's such a huge boon for Nintendo to get a game like that. An Ed Boon.
It'll be the portable version of Mortal Kombat 11.
Yeah.
Really cool.
They have also in Japan been doing streaming games of some of the stuff that they have lacked.
That's
something
true.
Like AC Odyssey.
Resident
Evil 7. Yeah. They aren't on Switch for everyone, but in Japan you can stream them, which is interesting to see how that'll evolve.
Yeah.
Not sure if we have the real infrastructure to carry out something like that here, but that we've talked about that quite a bit this year.
The Switch received a steady stream of amazing indie games.
Incredible indie games. Year. Yeah.
Dead Cells, Into the Breach, Darkest Dungeon, Hollow Knight, Celeste. Like those are just off the top of my head.
It's funny to me. Microsoft was the standard bearer for killer indie titles on the 360. And then I feel like Sony kind of took that mantle at the beginning of this generation. Yeah. And now I feel like Nintendo has it.
Yeah. Well, I feel like there was a long time where the Vita had that title as well. There's tons of killer indies coming to the Vita. And as one sort of fades away, the Switch kind of stepped into the spotlight, and it's such a perfect machine to play a bunch of these indies on. I can't tell you the number of hours I spent in Dead Cells and Darkest Dungeon this year.
Like, Firewatch got moved over.
Firewatch did get moved over. Yeah, Chris. Yeah. Yeah.
The fact that the Switch is portable. the fact that the Switch is portable, it can't be underestimated just how significant that is for the console. Because when I play games on other consoles, I'm just like, why can't I just take this with me?
Well, it's wild. Exactly. Like, it's wild because there are so many of us out there that will take a lower res version of a AAA game strictly based on portability, right? Like, I'm not a huge Mortal Kombat guy, but it's a game that I'm going to play in 2019, and I might as well wait for the Switch version because I can play that anywhere. You know, I can play it on the bus on the way to work or whatever, and just that factor alone makes it such an easier decision on what console am I going to get this on, even if it looks not as great, right?
Yeah, for sure. The Nintendo Switch eShop, though, is a total mess.
Oh, God, yeah. It sure is. And
they need to fix that.
Yeah.
It's like there's no curation. There's no recommendation system. Mm-hmm. It's just full of shovelware. You can't find anything you're looking for.
Yeah, I saw your tweet this morning about some good eShop shovelware. Yeah. There's not. I don't really know what their plan is there. I thought that a kind of an eShop overhaul would come along with Nintendo Switch Online infrastructure, and it just hasn't happened yet.
But we did get Nintendo Switch Online.
Yeah, which is also not very good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not a great deal overall. It's confusing. Not a ton of really great games. In terms of a virtual console replacement, it's severely lacking.
Yeah, no,
the conversation around that earlier this year was like, well, at least we'll have whatever their online offering is, because surely they'll bring NES, SNES, Game Boy Color, Game Boy Advance games to the Switch. And no, none of those.
I haven't subscribed to
it. Not even the best NES games. Well, it took me a long time to come around to the idea of subscribing to it, and I freaking host our Nintendo shows.
I did only because it was only $20.
Yeah.
I'll be honest. I was all right, I can do 20, and then if something comes along, I'm there. But if it had been 50, I wouldn't have done it.
Yeah. In terms of a virtual console thing, though, Andrew Goldfarb and I spoke to Reggie at E3. Andrew Goldfarb, noted
friend of the
Persona
show.
Fan.
Right.
Yeah. We were talking to Reggie about the fact that they sort of see this as the virtual console successor, but they're obviously taking a very different approach to it. I think their idea is more just...
Yeah, they're gouging us, dude.
They're just like, you'll have this full library instead of picking and choosing, but the full library is 3 games a month so far. We'll see if it grows. I'm curious to see how they change that.
That's not to say that it doesn't do some interesting things, like the SP versions of these games that are getting released on Virtual Console, Nintendo Switch Online, that allow you to start Legend of Zelda with the White Sword and a bunch of rupees, or show up later in the game with Metroid. Like, it's sort of a remix on these classic titles that we know and love, but not enough to justify the weight or the cost.
Yeah.
So
sure. But the uniqueness of the Nintendo Switch design has been seeing some cool things from even third parties, like the Flip Grip.
The Flip Grip looks really cool.
Gamer and Jeremy Parrish. That device is so cool; it feels like it was made just for me. Arcade shooters.
Yeah,
we're seeing really cool stuff like that as well.
Yeah, and we'll continue to see more. I should have written it down, but Brian Altano has fallen deeply in love with a similar grip that extends the width of the actual Joy-Con themselves.
It's supposed to be more comfortable.
Yeah, he says it makes it feel like an Xbox controller. Mm. You know, it changes your position of your thumbs on the Switch, which is I didn't really have an issue with until I started playing a lot of Smash, and then I realized how close those buttons are together. Yeah.
I mean, we haven't really talked about Smash, but of course that is a huge game arriving right at the end of the year.
Yeah, I had to issue a public apology because I've not been a huge Smashman in the past. I've been a fair weather Smash fan.
Yeah.
I'm more of a Nintendo fan of Mario, Zelda, Kirby, etc. But wow, is Smash Ultimate good?
Yeah.
It is. every bit worth the wait, and so much fun and so rewarding and very addicting. Are you guys playing much Ultimate?
I'm going to play it.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So you got to get a pro controller, though.
Yeah. You absolutely
right. Great for you.
Never has there been a better case for the pro controller than Super Smash Bros. Yeah, Ultimate.
Very true. I dipped out of Smash after Melee. Like, I tried Brawl and Wii U, but I really didn't get into them in the way I got into Melee. But this has enough of, like, there's just so much in there to explore that I am feeling that urge. To get back
I mean, World of Light is like damn near an RPG.
Yeah.
And just the idea of playing through every character in classic mode and unlocking another character at the end of that is like, it's been done 100 times before, but it just feels so good and it's so fun. Like, yeah, I've been playing a lot of Ultimate.
Now, I'm sure as you guys have discovered, when you're an adult and you can just buy a video game whenever you want, you have to hold back something for your parents to get you for Christmas. So this year I chose Smash Brothers.
Nice. Your parents are buying you Smash?
I mean, I hope so. That's what I told them I wanted.
It's your socks.
Bummer of a Christmas if not.
How will you get it if they don't buy it for you, Damon?
I know. I have to wait till my birthday.
Oh, dang.
The Nintendo Switch still does not have Netflix, though.
True. Yeah, but it does have YouTube.
Got YouTube.
YouTube came this year, which was
and Hulu.
Baffling to me because I'm an old guy, but I was just so surprised when people were like writing into the show to be like, you didn't talk about YouTube coming to the Switch. I was like, well, that's just YouTube on Switch. Yeah, but yeah, apparently probably it's a huge deal. Yeah.
But Zach, that's where they watch us at youtube.com/IGN. And other YouTube sites.
You need to get the IGN app on there.
Yeah.
So, Zach, all things considered, did Nintendo Switch have a good year? Soft yaw.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Nintendo Switch had the very definition of a good year. If I would give it a rating on the IGN scale, I would give it a 7.0 for good, not great, and nearly okay.
Nearly okay.
I think they're setting themselves up next year to have like a really killer year. But this year overall, mostly fine.
Is 2019 going to be Metroid?
Oh, hell no.
What about
well,
the big new Pokemon game?
That's supposed to be
Pokemon. Yes, Pokemon for sure. And there's a part of me that believes that, yes, we will see Metroid Prime just because of the way that they've been releasing, kind of keeping these games under their hat and then being like, by the way, it's out in the fall. Yeah. Or, you know, we didn't know about Smash in January. And now we're playing Smash.
What's Nintendo's kind of had the one big game at E3 that they themed their entire booth off of and revolved their entire show around.
Right.
What's that game in 2019?
I very well think it's probably Pokemon. Yeah.
Or Animal Crossing.
Depends.
Or Animal Crossing. Yeah. Animal Crossing as well.
They'll also have Luigi's Mansion 3.
Oh, yeah, I'm so psyched for that.
And Yoshi's Crafted World.
Yeah, yes. Yoshi's Crafted World is looking very good.
This new Fire Emblem, Three Houses.
I don't care about Fire Emblem, but
I care about Fire Emblem.
Who the hell is Marth? No, I'm just kidding.
I also am curious what they're going to do with Ubisoft, because at least in these 2 years of the Switch's life cycle, we got Mario and Rabbids. I assume we'll get a sequel announcement.
Right, and then Starlink.
So.
And then Starlink this year with Star Fox.
Which basically had its own Star Fox campaign.
Yeah.
That was just like the Star Fox game we've always wanted. So I think that partnership in particular is very interesting to me.
I'm excited
to
see what happens there.
Also, an exclusive announcement that just came out of the Game Awards, Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3.
Which is nuts.
Nintendo Switch exclusive.
That's a decade gone, that franchise. Like nobody's, and developed by Team Ninja? Like
Ninja.
Absolutely insane. Yeah. Huge deal for Nintendo.
Is it really though?
I think so.
Honestly, I don't want to be too much of a downer, but like the MUA games weren't that big of a deal back
MUA.
In the day.
I did not call them MUA. I loved them.
They weren't. But you know what else wasn't that big a deal in 2009 was the Marvel Cinematic Universe. You're one or two films deep at that point, maybe just Iron Man.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, Marvel is the second biggest franchise on the planet behind Star Wars. So,
what was the second Marvel Cinematic Universe movie?
I think it was Thor.
It was Iron Man, Incredible Hulk, Captain America, or
Incredible
Iron
Hulk
Man 2,
with Ed
and
Norton?
Captain.
Yes.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Speaking of things that are just fine,
Iron Man 2. Anyway, I'm just going over here in a corner.
So no release window for Metro Prime 4 or Bayonetta 3.
That's true.
Still waiting on that.
I bet you we at least see Metroid Prime 4. I don't know that it's coming out next year. Part of me would like to think so, but
they have a pretty strong year.
Given that the last time we saw it was E3 2017 and it was just a logo.
Yeah,
we just saw the number 4. And it's been radio silent this year. It doesn't leave me feeling too confident. Yeah. So.
But hopefully they'll show something of it at E3.
Yeah.
I would hope.
Yeah.
There's also rumors of a Switch redesign for next year.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing confirmed, but
pretty substantiated rumors too. The way that rumor came down seems like it was basically a done deal.
I think it's coming from the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah. And there's history there. There's a track record there with the Nintendo handhelds that would constantly revise themselves.
You're saying that Nintendo has a history of redesigning their handheld devices and selling them to you over and over again? Yeah, yes. You're absolutely right. And there's no reason why the Switch shouldn't follow suit. And there are things that we've talked about in the office quite a bit of, like, just quality of life things that we'd want to see in a Switch 2.0 that I'd be more than willing to ante up for. So.
Finally, for those keeping track at home, in terms of the free games that you get from subscribing to each platform service, PlayStation Plus, $60 a year, gave out $1,500 worth of free games
Holy
this
cow.
Year. Highlights would be Destiny 2, Bloodborne, Mafia 3, and XCOM 2. Games with Gold, also $60 a year, gave away $1,061.55 worth of games. Highlights include Metal Gear Solid 5, The Witness, and Superhot. And then there's Nintendo Online.
Did they even break even? Do you even
$20 a year for a pretty random selection of NES games?
Yeah.
And what do we value those at what, $2 each?
Yeah, I don't know how to quantify that.
Depends on who you're talking to, I think.
That one's tough. I hope Nintendo does. I mean, it'd be nice if they offered some sort
of. So the hardest part about Nintendo's online service is that they basically put themselves in direct competition with themselves, right? Because they have the NES Classic and the Super NES Classic. So if they want people to continue to purchase those, which continue to sell very well, they can't put SNES games on virtual console or the Nintendo Switch Online, right? Or they'd have to select different ones because if you can run out and pay $90 for an SNES Classic with two controllers and 20 of the best games on SNES, like, what's the point?
I just wish they'd embrace it. Like, my original Nintendo Wii is sitting, like, I think it's in the attic somewhere, but because on virtual console for that is a perfect port of one of my personal all-time favorite games.
Castlevania Rondo of Blood.
Pokemon Snap.
Eastbook 1 and 2, which was a TurboGrafx-16 CD-ROM game. My TurboGrafx is long gone. I bought another one, but it's like it's broken, and even if it worked, how the hell would I hook it up to a modern TV anyway? It's like it's just stuff like that. Like, bring everything that's ever been under the virtual console umbrella to the Switch.
It'll never happen, though. No, like, that era is so long gone at this point. Like, I desperately wish that I had held on to my Wii because I also had a ton of virtual console games. But the idea of getting TurboGrafx-16 and Sega Genesis and Super Nintendo and Nintendo 64 games all in one place, that's a bygone era at this point, because look at how lucrative these mini consoles are. Even Sony's putting out there
I mean, like you're saying,
to be this way.
Those consoles can't be a ton to manufacture, and so the money they're making back on them
and
selling this well.
I was talking to a friend of the show, Jared Petty, about this. Like, in the last 18 months, the retro market, the nostalgia market, has skyrocketed, due in part to these mini consoles, but also to the fact that, like, limited availability, right? So people like Capcom are seeing these, like, just insane sales on Mega Man Legacy collections, and it's because they're not available elsewhere at this point. So,
all right. So I don't think it's controversial to say that after everything I'm hearing is that the PlayStation 4 seems to have had the strongest year this year.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Who's
now,
to
don't
say,
get
really?
Cocky. Don't no, get know, cocky over here.
Oh, I'm looking at 2019. Don't worry.
Well, yeah, we're all in agreement that the personal computer is our console of choice.
So, yeah, but that's my final question. Who's looking like they're going to have the strongest 2019? And it might be Nintendo?
I think it might be Nintendo next year.
Yeah. My personal taste
in terms of
Nintendo,
the breadth of exclusive games we have coming down the line.
Yeah. I feel like that's probably a safe bet. Yeah.
There's lots of interesting stuff on the horizon for Microsoft.
I think Microsoft's gonna pull up out of the nosedive and start to, ascend towards 2020. But Nintendo sure looks great on paper next
year.
Sure
does.
Yeah. I think Sony's a question mark, because if those, like, three big games, if they happen to surprise us and two of them come out next year, then it's looking like a way better year than it does right now.
If they pull some kind of 1-2 punch with like Death Stranding and The Last of Us or something like that, like, there's no competition.
Then it changes dramatically. But
Gentlemen, thank you for joining me for this very special episode. All you viewers and listeners out there, make sure to check out... What?
No 20 questions? We're not going to play 20 questions?
We're not playing 20 questions.
This is the only reason I came.
Sorry, that's
damn.
Sorry I bamboozled you. But everybody should check out the all these respective podcasts. Mm-hmm. Podcast Unlocked.
Tuesdays, 3 p.m. IGN, unlocked.ign.com.
Nintendo Voice Chat.
Yeah.
Now you have to say
Thursday, 3 p.m. Right there on nvc.ign.com.
And Podcast Beyond.
Wednesdays at 3 p.m. Pacific at beyond.ign.com, and Thursdays at youtube.com.
We got you covered Tuesday through Friday here, huh?
Yeah. Mondays, good luck.
GameScoop goes up on Fridays.
Yeah.
That is all the scoops we have for you this week. Thank you, Ryan. Thank you, Zach. Thank you, Jonathan. My name is Damon. This is IGN GameScoop, and we're out.
Happy New Year!
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.